Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else you listen in. Previously on The Rundown with Lynn Keene.
And I just think, like, the beauty of being physically active in something you love, you can do it for life. And how great is that to know something that you love, or you can be part of it, even if it's not in the physical sense of running it, but maybe you're coordinating something, or you're volunteering at a race, or you're creating outreach for local youth. So many parts to what it is that could be your passion that will help you physically and emotionally, but that you can also give to others.
On this episode of The Rundown, I spoke with marathoner and Tracksmith marketing manager, Drew Hartman. Growing up, it was all about soccer for Drew. It was only when he realized he couldn't live out a childhood dream that running took center stage. Now he's tackling his personal goal of running 10 marathons before his 30th birthday and using his role with Tracksmith to help grow communities and provide positive experiences wherever he can. This episode of The Rundown is brought to you by Exact Nutrition. I was looking for a tasty, vegan-friendly alternative to traditional gels, and Exact Energy Bars passed the test. Now available in Canada and the US, you'll definitely want to try them on your next long run. And they're offering you 15% off your order when you use the promo code LARUNDOWN. So go to exactnutrition.com and fuel your goals today. In this week's news, we track down a man known as the UK's Forrest Gump. He's already ran across the US 5 times, and his latest feat involved running across Ireland in under 24 hours. Robert Pope completed a total of 213 kilometers, hydrating with Guinness, and was inspired by a lengthy YouTube playlist, which in itself was quite remarkable. He even dedicated his run to raise money for the World Wildlife Foundation, and collected $3,100 in the process. We'll throw the link in the show notes if you feel like supporting the cause. I'll definitely be reaching out to Robert in the near future to see if he can join us on The Rundown to share his journey with us. Make sure to check the show notes for links to this story, special offerings, as well as the ongoing protests. There will also be a list of funds and foundations that need your support, so please consider donating to help support this movement. That's all for now. Gotta run. It's always fun to go to races and meet new people. I had the fortune of running CIM last year, and with the group I was with, was able to meet a couple pretty cool people in the run space. My next guest is one of those people, and he's a runner himself. He also works for a pretty awesome run brand that's very well known. You can run as a passion, but you can also do it as work too. And it seems kind of how he's found himself in that space as well. So I'd like to pick his brain on that. And without further ado, I'd like to welcome to the show, Drew Hartman.
Thank you, Justin. It's great to meet you, and great to honestly get the Canada, USA, Mexico connection all at CIM last year.
Right. And I think, I always give him credit, but I have Sean to thank for many connections on that trip. And, you're another person that I got to meet through Sean, and, you know, maybe I should bring him on as a kind of a researching guest person for our show.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we met at a Shakeout for Tracksmith, right? So that kind of like broke in the weekend a little bit. And how was that the first thing that you did kind of coming out of the pandemic? I know it was my first race coming back. Was that just an opportunity that presented itself kind of coming out of it?
Exactly. CIM is a race that I think a lot of people have heard about. If you want to run fast and you want to train through the fall instead of the summer, it has a big appeal. So just like you said, coming off the pandemic, it felt like far enough out at that time that if it was going to be canceled for COVID reasons, you'd have plenty of time for you to see how the fall plays out in terms of marathons. So it seemed like a safe pick for me personally.
Yeah, to not only to race, but also for any kind of activation you might be doing for Tracksmith. And I'm sure that was also a challenge. I mean, it's a challenge as an athlete, but also when you're trying to plan events and such, a lot's on the line. And a lot of planning goes into these things too, right?
Yeah, I think the CIM meetups that we did for the shakeout was exploring something outside of the norm that we normally do at Tracksmith. In the past, we've activated around the major marathons, usually domestically, right? We would do Boston, which is our home base, and New York and Chicago. We've done some in London before, but outside of the majors, nothing really in terms of that. So it was a nice little exploration, see how things felt in a small market.
So that's interesting. So what was the feedback after a weekend like that at a non-major marathon? I know I loved it personally, and I've got to run Boston and New York, soon to be Berlin. I know we're both gearing up for that.
Exactly.
But what was it like for a non-major marathon?
From a personal side, I really haven't done any of the majors. Berlin is going to be my second one, and I'm more familiar with the working side of it, like working at the pop-ups we do. And like you said before, those things are months and months of planning. And for something like this, we wanted to see how the community would still show up in a race that seemed like there was a lot of people kind of descending on Sacramento, right? A lot of out-of-towners coming together and seeing what that would feel like. And we felt like it was a pretty solid group of people that came through, better than we expected, and gave us more confidence and encouragement to kind of continue to think about those races outside of the majors, and what does community development look like there, as opposed to, you know, trying to bring in gear and try to put that on people, you know, a little bit different focus.
Yeah, and I like that too. You know, that's the easy part, right? Just giving people stuff to wear, you know, because your stuff is, it's good quality stuff. I mean, I remember walking into the Tracksmith store, my first Boston Marathon, and you know, you guys were doing a collaboration with Cieli at the time. So we got these cool yellow hats that no one else would get. It was like the first couple hundred people that would get them. But on the other side, you know, how do people come out of, you know, the pandemic, out of, you know, non-social settings? You know, how do people respond to being in large groups again and all that? So I'm sure you had a lot of questions too going in, like just how people would respond. And yeah, it sounds like they responded quite well.
Yeah, the hat you have from that Boston Marathon is a relic. I know. I remember seeing that on eBay the day after. kind of pained me, right? You know, you hope the person who gets it is the one to keep it, but and to mm-hmm. resonate with, you know, the meaning behind it. But yeah, you're totally right. I think every time we go to a race, no matter the size or where it is, I always bring nerves with me, and something needs to settle them. And usually people do a good job at letting those nerves dissipate, or allowing conversation to take over instead of thinking about what's going on 2 days later or something like that. The meetup that we did, there's still a little shakeout, to me felt very important just personally, because we were able to go to a new place at this time where, you know, social interaction was kind of kicking back up after a long time. And I was a little bit more on edge getting there than I normally would be, just that reason alone. So I know flying into Sacramento, normally if it was a regular year and a regular race, I'd still have some nerves coming in, a lot on the line in 2 days when you toe the line. But in the scope of seeing people for the first time, larger crowds, not racing for so long officially, the nerves are definitely heightened on my end. And that community run provided a moment just to get back into the social aspect of running, which is arguably the more important thing to me right now in life. And mm-hmm. yeah, that personally allowed me to kind of dissipate the nerves, and I hope it did for other people as well.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I mean, it was like baby steps, you know, but everything felt like the first time again, like from my personal experience. Like we shared a house with, you know, five other individuals. Then we go to a shakeout that's like, there's more people there. So it's then a little bit bigger. And then we go to the expo and like, okay, wow, we're among mother other runners now. And, you know, things, I mean, things were a bit different in the States too, compared to Canada, which also came into play. But when it was all said and done, it just totally felt like normal again. And I don't know, like personally, if it came back a lot quicker maybe than I thought it might. So yeah, it's just a little bit of kind of my experience too. But how, what other opportunities popped up for you during the pandemic? I know it was a challenge for a lot of people, but was there opportunities that you capitalized on either in your training or with work?
Yeah, I spent, from a training side of things, I had this idea, that this was the chance to get the to get as close to being a, you know, professional or semi-professional as possible, right? Like this is the opportunity where it's, there's no commute to work, so it doubles. What if I wanted to run three times? You know, like crazy mileage and falling in love with this idea of, if it's going to happen, it's going to be now. And I'm going to make all my meals. I'm not going to eat out, you know, all of that stuff. Right. And I ended up, there was like a half marathon that I was training for in, I want to say February, that got canceled. So we did a half marathon time trial in Boston around the tempo loop, just around Harvard Stadium. And we can put an asterisk on that if you want to return to that topic in itself. But after that race, or after that time trial, I ended up getting injured for like 6 months. So I spent a majority of that first stretch not running at all, which was super hard to look forward to, I don't know, exploring that side of things. And unfortunately, having that sidelined and having to find other ways to truly like dig in with fitness and kind of reestablishing your relationship with your body and things of that nature. So that was tough, to be completely honest.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, I kind of had the same mind, like frame of mind going in too, that this was a chance to catch up on, you know, to put in work. You don't know, no rain happening, you know, it's just a more relaxed maybe approach to training, that is just like, you're in it to gain fitness. And whenever the race happens, you'll be ready. You know, it's kind of like a long preparation for something to come. But I was going to ask you about that injury. Like, was that something, a reoccurring thing, or was that because maybe you took on too much too soon, or what was the root cause of that?
I feel like every time I get injured or something sidelines me, I chalk it up to me being a little unaware of my body in this space and in this kind of level of activity that I'm exploring. It is pretty new-ish. You know, spent time running obviously before 19 or 2020, but maybe there's just too much too soon or going too hard, like running my easy runs too fast and things of that nature. And I've had some lower leg injuries kind of bounce around and come up to my IT band and then go back down to my feet, you know, so it's always it's like a slinky of injury that is traveling up and down my leg at times. That one was a little bit more scary to me, because before I felt like what it feels like to have a sore leg or, you know, a weakness in some area, but this is the first time where I could actively feel my Achilles or my soleus like pop when it was being used. It was being used a certain way. So I had to have a few people tell me to shut it down before I officially, you know, calmed down with it, decided to get on the bike, do some indoor trainer things, start hiking more to kind of build up leg strength and just do that more to enjoy the outdoors instead of trying to get something from it, which is a challenge in itself at times.
So did that help you? Like, do you feel like you came out of it stronger now? Has it helped you like appreciate other aspects of movement?
Definitely appreciating being outside was a huge part of it, right? Like coming back to running at a time where you're running with a mask or a buff or having to alter the way you previously had a relationship with the sport or with the activity was discovering all over again that made it fresh and made it new. And when things started getting more comfortable again and fitness kind of comes along and catches up with where your body's at, there's definitely a level of gratitude that I had for like my body and just generally health in that space. This is pre-vaccine stuff, you know, this is before we had an idea of what the handle we had on this thing was. So yeah, gratitude is probably the biggest thing to walk away from that injury with.
Mm-hmm. Totally. And I liked what you said about, you know, you guys did a little half marathon. I put an asterisk on my page, just so you know. Want you to elaborate on that, because I think it was, you know, there was cool opportunities that popped up throughout, you know, within the run community, like, hey, we don't want to be stuck inside doing nothing. We still like to run. Like, there's no races, but we can make our own. So where did that come from?
Yeah, there's a large group of us who were signed up for the New Bedford Half Marathon. And for some folks, it was tuning up to a marathon. Other folks were kind of just testing the waters, seeing what it was like. And I was more on the test the water side of things. So we went back to a workout loop that people can sound off in the comments if they care. But this is a loop around a stadium at Harvard. It's the old Coliseum that they still play football in, and the parking lots that are around it. It is a lively debate whether or not it's actually 1,200 meters or not. A lot of people say it's like 1195, 1170. But all I can say is you'll run your fastest times there, and it's a good confidence builder for sure. And to run a half marathon time trial on that is mundane, to say the least. So we built it out a little bit where we brought in people to like pace on certain laps and drop in and drop out to kind of keep people honest and keep them focused. And somebody wheeled it out to make sure that we were actually going to run the distance of a half marathon around there. And it made it fun, right? No times are official. I still haven't run a half since then. So it is my unofficial half PR in that moment. But like, there are so many things that came up afterwards, right? Like the Trials of Miles and Tracksmith partnered together on a race series that was like a knockout bracket style elimination that was connecting people from all over the run space. And that I thought was another great like innovation of, you're going to time trial all of these distances and go head to head with somebody you've never met before. And it's a way to stay engaged, and you have to like keep showing up every week or every month and putting yourself out there, but you're by yourself. There's still a sense of community in it, you know?
Mm-hmm. And like, I've seen photos of that. That's pretty awesome that you do these track meets, and something that I've kind of fantasized about a little bit, doing something like that close to home, you know, just to have like a little compete, you know, it's so fun. I find it can be a positive experience for so many people, you know, and I think maybe a lot of people shy away from it a little because it's fast and furious, and you're vulnerable too at the same time, and shorter distances. What does it look like for you guys, and you know, how did that idea kind of develop and evolve?
Well, I think the mastermind of the Twilight 5K started off as an idea from our community side of things. Lou Serafini is the huge driver of what community means at Tracksmith, and he wanted to put on kind of a local ragtag at first like 5K series in Boston alone, and people could show up. They would run most likely their first track 5K ever, or for folks who have before, a chance to run fast on the track again. And we would have pacers, we would have music, we'd have, you know, different heats, just to get people the best experience and the best chance to run their fastest time, whatever that is. So that was the infancy of that Twilight 5K. And over the years it developed into, you know, first a bigger Boston event and more heats, more pacers, you know, just more attention in general. And then we moved to New York and Boston as the two hubs. We tried to run it and try to accomplish it. And then this year was the most ambitious, you know. We decided 8 cities in 2 rounds. So there is a round that went on in July and a round that's going on in August. And it's wild to see how that simple idea, or just that initial message to the running community, has resonated in very different places. And those events feel different places too, as they should, because they kind of take on the character in the community that we're like popping up in or that week.
Yeah, do you get to participate in those events too, or are you there to just help organize them, make sure everything runs smoothly?
I'm definitely there. So I got to take part in the San Francisco and the LA dates in July. And
nice.
It was great to be there, see some old friends and some friends I never met before. You know, we're like Instagram friends only prior to those things, and make sure that those events are going all right. But it was also very fortunate to pace some heats as well. So showing up there, throwing the pacer's bib on, you know, you're checking people in, and then they're making the announcement that everyone has to get on the line. You're rushing over, pinning your bib on. It kind of brought me back to high school again, of like just rushing to nothing's ever calm the day of a track meet, in my opinion, or at least in my experience. Yeah, I know that in my experience through high school track meets, nothing feels, everything's chaotic, in my opinion. I'm always between thoughts and never have my shoes on and laced up properly. My bib is like half on as well. And it's good to know that, you know, at the ripe age of 29, I can have the same experience again.
But yeah, no, and that I've had that experience too. Like the time goes so fast on race day, you know, you think you're ready, and then before you know it, it's time to get out the door. And like, yeah, you got your shoes undone and your bib's hanging off. And yeah, it's kind of I don't know. Maybe that's something I can definitely link to as well. So you mentioned your early days in track, and I always like to go back to the beginning just to find out, you know, who Drew is really, and, you know, how you grew up. Were you athletic as a kid? You know, where did the love for running come in?
Yeah, I think the start for me was in soccer. It was my first love in sport, and played baseball as well, but it wasn't as good. I was a tiny kid, so that didn't really translate well to like hitting dingers or anything. So when I was playing soccer, my thought process growing up is that I really wanted to go and play that at a college level, and, you know, whatever came through beyond. And going to college, I knew I wanted to go to a school that would also be a solid program for what I wanted to study. So it's like, all right, where can I get a solid degree in communication or journalism and play soccer? And unfortunately, as I discovered, those things don't always correlate in terms of me being wanted on that team. So I tried to hit up coaches at schools I wanted to go to. And yeah, I was kind of ghosted. And my soccer career started to decline. I played club soccer in college and started running to stay in shape. But I guess I would rather say that my love of running developed later, even though that I did it in high school. It was always something to keep me in shape for soccer. And I remember not taking it seriously. And that's one of my biggest regrets, in not listening to my coaches more and not appreciating it for what it is. I treated it like a social hour with friends, and I was always frustrated that it never went better. But I imagine if I gave it a more honest effort, I would have seen something on the other side of it as well.
So what were they telling you? Like, what, you know, did they see kind of a potential in you and you just you didn't see that same thing, or was it just because you enjoy that social aspect? And I mean, you still do enjoy that as well, right? So
yeah, it is still something super important. I think the getting into track in high school was a great entry point, and I learned a little bit about the training structure, but I'm sure I would have retained so much more if I cared to listen and, you know, fell in love with the process like I have now. I think in a high school setting, and obviously beyond as well, like in the shorter distances and track, the cadence of competing is so often, and the results never lined up for me at that time. So I almost fell out of love with it. Cause it just like, oh man, I gotta go to this track meet this weekend. I'm gonna get washed. You know, I'm gonna get bodied at the track meet again. I think like showing up to practice on Tuesday and doing like X amount of reps on the track didn't really appeal to me as much. Like, I still did it, but I wasn't as grateful for that experience at the time. But it was only by my own design, you know?
Yeah, totally. was that hard for you? I mean, yeah, it's not very motivating to know you're just gonna get, you know, like you said, like get your ass kicked on the track or whatever. I mean, also the soccer thing, you know, like that it didn't go the way you had thought. Like, how do you deal with adversity or when things don't go the way you expected them to go?
The soccer and the track thing felt a little different because the periods of time in my life. I think with competition in high school track and it not going as well as I wanted to, and not finding as much joy in it at the time, I think it was more just don't quit something you started, or hey, it's only a season, you know. You can easily put things off when the finish line is in front of you. And I wasn't sure if I would run again after that because I didn't feel a calling from that activity. But with soccer, the adversity thing there and seeing that not materialize was tough. I mean, I hung on to it as best I could by playing club soccer, and I had these dreams about being like recognized by the varsity coaches and getting pulled up or something. But I don't know, it really like influenced me to move past it or get over it. I think I just, the avenue for that to be successful seemed to be narrowing, right? And that was the adversity in itself, and pivoting to see what do I like about this sport is, all right, I'm a midfielder. I like running. I like the intensity in which I have to act, in which I have to train, in which I have to compete. So maybe there's something I can pursue there. Running is an accessible thing. So maybe I can just shift the focus and enjoy being outside and work hard in a different way. I was never a contact sport kid, so it wasn't like I was going to find something in that realm afterwards. But so I guess that's where the focus shifted. It was like in my sophomore year of college to kind of get back to running again and try to enjoy it and use it as a tool for exploration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, similar to you, I was also a midfielder in soccer and didn't have these dreams of becoming a big league soccer player or anything like that. But I think that sets a great, I think other sports, and I think it's important for kids, I guess, to have a good, well-rounded view of sports and how they can also translate to other things. Like, you know, you're running in soccer, but I think soccer and hockey for me gave me a good base for running later in life, you know, and similar to you, I found it later. So yeah, do you think those same challenges like help you now to kind of, you know, it's good to be competitive, but also to have like a good time, you know, trusting the process and to give yourself the time, to allow yourself the time to get better and to make improvements and to work through stuff?
It feels like it evolves as, you know, as we all get older and the priorities change. You know, I might have more or less time to do that activity, and injuries come up and things of that nature. But I guess questioning the why am I doing this thing? I know everybody's talked about their like the concept of the why on a podcast before, but I like to boil it down to a phrase that I joke around with friends all the time. Like, we're not getting paid to do this. Like, no one's paying me to run, you know? So like, I'm doing it for another reason. And if I can't find that immediately, I need to sit down and assess it. And that why or what I'm enjoying about running may change every month, every year, every training block. But if I'm able to kind of come back to that when I'm faced with the reality that I'm not getting paid to do this activity, often I'm paying to do this activity, that there's something that must be magnetic about it that keeps pulling me back for another time.
Have you figured that out yet?
Currently, I would say that what I'm enjoying most about running is the social aspect, right? This is something that we just talked about in like the high school aspect, but it's different now. I think like before it was a way to kind of like mess around with friends. It was something to do after school. But now with more regularity and training, my training partners tend to be some of my best friends because of what I experience with them, right? The highs and the lows and doing that several days a week. It's borderline codependency at that point of like, if they're not there, I get a little nervous about doing the workout or something, you know? And the idea of like, oh my goodness, like we might be doing different races, you know? Like I might be doing one in October, you might be doing one in November. Like, how are we both gonna fare on our own? But it's a social practice. And now that I've been able to experience more travel and different running communities through working for Tracksmith, the social aspect for me is also discovering like what makes people tick in communities outside my own and why they do it and kind of bring that back into my own practice.
Mm. Yeah. I think that's a great point. Like that, I think group running is an awesome thing, especially if you're working towards a similar goal, like you are, just to know you're not alone. You know, a lot of the questions you hear from athletes are related to or working through training blocks and stuff like that. And for a lot of people, they're training solo, but even if you have one other person, it becomes so much more relatable and real. And you know that you're not in that space alone, or you're not the only one going through that, because let's face it, like training for a marathon it's tough. You know, it's a lot of running and it's tiring, and like you question yourself all the time. Yeah. And I'm tired. So, you know, that's the pain that you go through together is like what makes it all the fun. Right.
And I feel like the reason why I focus on what I enjoy about running currently instead of, you know, the bedrock foundation of why I'm running, you know, from day one till today, is I used to try to find that and distill my relationship to the sport in a very concise way. You know, I'm running because it's the best way to truly understand what my body is capable of, you know, that kind of thing. But personally, I've had issues in like straying from that or not feeling that pull. It's not pulling me as strongly as it once did. And I'm the type of person where in that kind of thought process, I've beaten myself up over that before. I'm like, wow, do I not love it anymore? If that doesn't mean that much to me right now. So that's why I'm trying to be more fluid with how I view running just as a whole. What am I enjoying right now about it? And to me, that's enough. I know there's always other factors at play. There's things that are operating under the surface, you know, in terms of the why, but I just found a little bit more success in being like, all right, what's good right now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. That's awesome. So how did you get back into it? Like, what was there something that clicked all of a sudden? Was there a friend that said, hey, like, we're doing this, like, come along? Like, when did the dream of the marathon come into play? It's such a an elusive distance and one that so many are attempting to tackle at this very moment.
Yeah, I was getting into regularly in college, just like for leisure, and I thought it'd be fun to run a marathon on my 21st birthday, and being a way to celebrate it as an accomplishment. So I found a training plan online and tried to stick to it as best as possible, and I ran the Hartford, Connecticut marathon was my first one, and found out very quickly that I had no idea what I was doing, but it, like, in the best way, right? It was like, I had like a pair of Saucony Kinvaras with like 400 miles on them on race day that I was like, yeah, let's do this. I had two shin sleeves because I was falling apart. It was like, you know, run. I was doing my best just to stay in one piece, and that, I wouldn't say it's not a brutal awakening, but that kind of kick in the teeth in the beginning was like, okay, there's some fun aspects of that. And trying to roll that forward, I thought, okay, if I did this on my 21st birthday, I should do, I don't know, 10 of these before I turn 30. And it was just a bucket list thing. And then I would find a race and travel to it. So kind of keeping the exploration aspect alive with it and be like, all right, I want to do one in San Diego. It would be fun to fly there and do that. I want to do one in Las Vegas. Let's do that. And I was kind of just checking off boxes, you know, it's like, oh, that seems like a cool race. I want to go there and do it, which comes with so much privilege to just be like a kid in your 20s being like, I want to go to this place and then purchase a plane ticket and a hotel. Like, I recognize that now and how wild a decision making that was in my life, and how lucky I was to do it. But I think my focus shifted in terms of doing races in like 2019, which is when my relationship with Tracksmith started. Yeah.
Okay. So is there any, is that a coincidence or what's the connection there?
Yeah, I was aware of Tracksmith, or became aware of them when I went to school in Boston for undergrad, and for grad school, I actually went to law school, which is the probably more interesting secret of my academic career, I imagine. so when I was in law school, I was familiar with the track house opening on Newbury Street, and I was started going to their group runs because it was much better than going alone. And that was my first entry into group running, was going there and trying that out. And that fall, I applied to like work retail because I thought, oh, it could be fun to work for them one day. And at that time in my life, I thought, wouldn't it be cool to be an in-house attorney for Tracksmith? And that was the goal. That was like the vision when I was, I don't know, it was like 2016 or 2017. And I was working part-time retail. I thought, like, once I, you know, pass the bar, and then you could, you know, write the cover letter of your life. And then hopefully, you know, someone hands you a job. That's probably how that works.
Sure, it makes sense, right?
Right. You're like, I know cover letters are an element of getting hired, but I don't know if it's that important in terms of someone making a job for you out of there. But yeah, so I started working there, and the person who hired me was Lou Serafini, the guy I mentioned earlier. He's a community manager now. He started off doing retail and community at Tracksmith, which was, I imagine, super hard to do both. Manage a shop and then also manage the community vision for a brand. And when we were there, we would talk about his running and my running a lot. And in 2019, he just asked me, who's coaching you, by the way? Just to get off the cuff. And it's like, I'm just finding plans online and, you know, editing them in a way that I think they're fun. And he's like, I'll coach you if you want. And I was like, really? And it felt like I was getting called up to the big leagues, because I told somebody that I would ask him to coach me if I hit a certain time. Like, I thought I had to earn it. I thought I had to earn a coach in my early in my running career. And I don't know if that resonates with you in any way, but that was my first thought. I thought I had to earn a coach. I had to show them what I was capable of in order to be able to, you know, get their attention and deserve their time, you know? But him asking me demystified that a bit and now kind of changed my, I mean, in that point, changed the way that I saw it. I was like, oh, wait, everyone can use a coach. Like at every level of sport that I've been involved in every sport, there was a coach to make you better. So it doesn't matter like your ability level or how often you race and things of that nature. There's always a space and place for someone to kind of guide you with their expertise, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, the part, I don't know if I thought that I needed to earn the attention of a coach, but certainly, you know, the two people, my mentors now that coached me early on, you know, it's not something that they're charging me for, you know, they were kind of just like took me under their wing and, you know, they were training for distances much longer. So they let me tag along. But what I did feel like I needed to do was keep showing up and keep asking questions. So kind of in the same lane as that, to prove that, yes, I could do this, that I was dedicated enough to, and not waste their time or waste their expertise. You know what I mean? Like if you're going to ask a question, like you're there, you should like take what they give you and then, and apply it, you know, if you're seeking out their advice or their expertise. But I guess maybe that's kind of how I felt about it. But yeah, I mean, didn't feel like I needed one initially. I ran years without a coach and I just ran like as hard as I could 3 days a week. and then like showed up to a half marathon and like thought my legs were going to fall off at the end, you know?
Yeah.
Like not the right way to train at all.
That Venn diagram definitely like overlaps between you and I pretty aggressively in terms of how like you show your gratitude to that coach, right? And being like, okay, I know this is your time, even though it's like my time and my money, you know, in most cases, while in a coach relationship, it's, yeah, it felt like showing them like, I'm serious about this. And whatever that meant, I don't know what that meant at the time. It was like, I want this as much as you want me to do this. So yeah, it's a good place to start.
And also like they're showing you that they, and I asked you like the question, like, did somebody see that in you? Or I ask people that a lot, is that like the realization for potential, and like that potential to me is like what you're capable of, what your body's capable of, not compared to anyone else, but like by him asking you, like, are you coach? And you know, I'd like to coach you. Like clearly he saw something in you that maybe you didn't see in yourself.
Yeah, it definitely made me feel more confident. There's definitely some nerves of getting into that as well. And similar to what you said, just showing that I could listen and I could do what was being asked and also perform as well. And I think the last marathon that I ran on my own with no coach was like the LA marathon. I flew out there and I think I ran like a 3:19 or something like that. And I was like, all right, if I run a 3:10, then I'll ask him and then I'll try to like run, you know, I'll try to run sub-3 for the first time. And he asked me pretty much like right when I got back from that race. Mm-hmm. And we took on, I think the first race we took on was like Marine Corps Marathon. And
oh
yeah, that was the first one we worked on together. And that was a special one to get involved in. And just seeing the structure and the time and the expertise and the people that he would kind of pair me with and how we were going to get better together was so inspiring, just to take the next steps together. So it was a huge leap in terms of how the race went. Ran like 3:01 there, and that felt amazing. But at the same time, there's still this imposter syndrome. You know, am I one of his slower athletes? Like, where do I stack up? Is he happy with how I did? Which is a whole other can of worms, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like the approval, right? Yeah. Like that, like, or this validation that you're worthy of the coaching, you know, that you fit into this, this model of athlete that they want to coach, that they want to have on their roster, you know, because, you know, they're also limited in their time. And I think I do like that about my coach, that he trains a group of us. So he'll give us like kind of the same plan for all year. And then when we're approaching our event, he'll tweak things for marathoners and, yeah. you know, but he kind of train us all. They're like, this is the work you need to do. It's not very different for anybody. In that way, we're all the same, but obviously we're hitting different trainings differently, and we excel at different distances and different workouts.
Yeah, so. it's democratizing.
Yeah, and then that kind of gives you the confidence.
To me, it feels like it's like democratizing the training. Like it's the same for everybody as a baseline, is what it felt like. It seemed like to me one of the first. I don't know. Obviously, team sport different than individual, but for this to be an individual sport made into a team sport like that, that was the best experience I had. Is after Marine Corps, Lewis put me together in a group that he wanted to. He put me in this group of like of five other women, and they were all gonna try to hit the trial standard of 2:45. And that was like the next goal. And it felt like getting shot out of a cannon to be like, you know, going from like 3:01 shrugging, like, is that good enough, to him being like, hey, let's put this group together and let's see what we can do. And those are the best years, like some of the best years of running. Obviously it's, you know, I think continually even getting better. But that was my first like introduction of a training group, like you said. That's what made it really cool, is being in that training group.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, I'm hearing you and I'm smiling because I think that, you know, there's a lot of things that we experience that are very similar. Like I was training with this, an elite female runner in Montreal, and, you know, we're still great friends, but she used to like, you know, I wasn't paired up with her. We just decided, you know, we'd be good training partners, and she dragged me to the track and make me do like 24 200s, and I'm like dying, you know. And it's like I didn't know what I was getting myself into. I was such a rook, you know. And but I mean, that's how you improve. That's, you got to follow the fast feet, you got to train with the, you know, people that are better with you. And read a book, a friend gave me a book called Running to the Edge. I don't know if you've read that one, but it's all about like Meb's in that story. It's, you know, he was a famous coach, and, you know, made his athletes, you know, go run together and push each other on the trails. And, you know, it was whoever had the fast legs that day, you know, just, you know, push the pace and running these tempos, you know. And it's like the power that you can have together and the improvement you can make when you're not just on your own, you know. It's a hard enough thing to do on your own. It's good to be with other people. I can definitely agree with that.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, I don't know if you have something to add there.
Oh, I was, the reason why I own this mic, like the joke that I was going to make to you. I'm also on like a podcasting mic right now, because when I was in this group, I was like so inspired by these women. That I was like, all right, I'm gonna like document everything that we do, and I'm gonna, you know, I had a domain for a website, and I did like podcast episodes where I was like profiling these women, and I was keeping a blog about the training, and it was all about like the success story that it would be. And so that is why this mic is in my possession, but it has not been used since, like, oh man, it hasn't been used since 2019.
Oh, maybe this is the start then. This is the start of something.
Yeah.
You know, the Drew Hartman podcast, you know, you never know. You never know. How have you seen like community? Cause you joined that first group run. I don't know if that was an intimidating moment for you. I know if a lot of people struggle with that. As fun as it looks, you know, on social media and stuff like that, it can be a pretty challenging thing for people to come out of their shell and to meet other people and that. But like, my question is more, how have you seen the run community change over time? You've been, you know, been a part of it for a while now.
Yeah. And I think I have a lot of blind spots. That's probably the first thing I'll say is like, I only know, or I'm only aware of the communities that I've been invited to be in or to experience. So my first take on the community was mainly like the Boston running community. That was my first place where I really experienced it. And then Instagram was like the other aspect or the other arm of my perception of it. And I think at that time, Boston community to me meant competition. And it was, who do you run for? Where did you run in college? You know, things of that nature. And it felt very it felt very collegiate in that sense. And the reason why my lens was so focused that way is because it was because my view of community was pretty one-dimensional, and I wasn't experiencing the community that had been there the whole time. So in Boston, there are great crews have been around for years before I even started getting into running, like the Unnamed Run crew, Pioneers, right? Just some great groups, Trailblazers, although that's like a little bit more on the newer side. My perception of community, I think, is changing most because of how I'm challenging myself more so than like how the community might be evolving, or at least that's my perception of it right now. So, You know, when I'm entering a new community, like LA, for example, I was fortunate enough to go out there for work this past March, and we did some activations there leading into the LA Marathon and met some, I can say, friends for life there. And the perspective I took in understanding that community is historically, like what went down. Like, I didn't want to go into a community thinking that what was in front of my face today was the way it was, you know, way back when, and learning about the historical perspectives, who used to, you know, work together, how did it split, why did it split, what different communities are served by all of these different crews and clubs, and what does it look like to get those people in the same room? Is it easy? Is it at a meet? Is it at a social endeavor? So I think this is a very long-winded answer just to say that the community shift that I've personally seen is based on my own personal experience. And as long as it comes from an historical perspective, I feel like I can continue to learn and make space for all of the clubs, crews, and individuals that are here now and that will develop in the next 10, 15, 20 years. Because it's always going to keep moving, you know. People always have cool ideas. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and how are these, geographically, they're all different, yeah. But like, how are they, what are the ways in which runners are similar in your eyes?
I've found that there's a social element in everyone, and this could be definitely a bias for me, because I seek that out in running. So it's almost like, you know, it's like seeing Jesus on my toast. You know, it's something that's like, it's there because I want it to be. But when I go into a place like LA, I see how community driven it is in terms of like, this is an open workout. People are invited and we're going to go, you know, we're going to go grab a drink after. And when there's an event in town, everybody's going to each other's events, like during marathon weekend, and there's people are buying each other's club merch, right? It's something I'd never seen before. So that's like the extreme community on that side. But the something I find now that I live in Boulder now, and something I find here is the social element looks different. And there are a lot of teams out here, but I wouldn't say there are crews. And the community is fostered more through competition, right? You see the same people when you race. You see the same people at that track meet or on the line at whatever road race in the area. And I'm very fortunate to be like in the community with two friends and training partners, Brian Troy and Aaron Osgood. They started this crew called the Track Club, and there's a little ice cream logo you might have seen on social media before, you know? Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
And so their whole, the way they made space for community here that I really connect to and completely vibe with is this community run every Wednesday at 7 a.m. is surrounding the idea that we all need to run easier. And it doesn't matter like who you are, whether you're a pro, semi-elite, or you know, semi-pro, or you know, you're taking on like your first race. Everybody can benefit from running easier. So kind of making this very committed, branded effort with like merch and like an Instagram and stuff like that, that is the basis for what I see as community in Boulder in a way that like mimics the community I see in other places, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. I think it's, is it soft hour? It's a soft cone.
Exactly.
And exactly. I think that's why I like it.
It's soft hour. So the idea is like, it's running an hour easy together.
Yeah. I love that. That's so good.
Yeah.
And it's so true. You know, you don't have to run hard all the time. Like, I mean, that was my early mistake when I didn't know anything about anything running wise, just like, you know, this makes sense. And I'll run a half marathon before my half marathon, like, you know, and like, just little mistakes that I made along the way, but you know, that's how you learn. Looking back, what are some, you know, you ran that first marathon. You know, what are some things that maybe you did that you're like, what was I thinking?
Oh man. I think being kind to myself is something I've learned to do or try. I'm still always trying to do it. But yeah, that's probably like the biggest thing I've learned, because the falling in love with like what's on, like what's in a book that you're getting training from, or like on a PDF that you found online, or even like a text from your coach, you fall in love with that number and you're not willing to be flexible with yourself. Whether it's like physically knowing that, hey, maybe it's not like the day to do that, or maybe mentally you're going through a lot and something of that nature. If you're not able to be kind to yourself, you're never going to get through that week being happy and satisfied with how that went.
Yeah, no, totally. And then do you find like being in the position you're in, you know, you work in what you love, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, there's a lot of aspects, and I find this is, you know, my work is not in running, but you know, with the podcast, with my training, with, you know, group runs once a week. Do you find it hard to separate the work from your life? You know, do you feel like you always have to be on, or maybe you like that component of your life?
It's a really good question, Dustin. I feel like I was thinking about this more so in my new role. So in March or April is when I started this new role on the marketing team at Tracksmith. And previously I'd been in customer service. So I had customer interface and I was working at these pop-ups, but now from a marketing sense, I don't know, I had a little bit of a moment of trying to think of what do I contribute to running in a way. And it was tough being like, all right, I'm not the fastest person out there. So that can't be my identity. You know, I can't get by on that. And then I was wondering, oh, should I be doing this? Right? Like people who are in marketing for running brands are like, you know, in many cases, fast people who are known in the space in running before they're known professionally, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to kind of do some soul searching to figure out like, what is my identity in running? And I feel like if I didn't work in running, it would be so much easier to be like, yeah, I'm just the guy who shows up to practice and it's fine. It's great. Yeah. But I'm just like, but here I am like sitting on my couch being like, what it provide to running, and like, who am I to people in it? Which is such a, it makes me laugh at myself, because like, why would I take myself so seriously to consider that? And I think that's like, being able to laugh at that has allowed me to have that conversation with myself easier. And I think what I, the way that I'm able to operate with the whole working in the running space and being a runner in my, by my own admission, I feel like the thing that allows me to do that is I think of, all right, what is, what can I add value to running? Like, what can I do to add value to running? And maybe that's just being like the guy who's going to be at an event, the, you know, in Sacramento at CIM at a shakeout, and we just have a very meaningful conversation about like what running means to you. Maybe it's, you know, we shared a run together at this LA activation, and like I got to learn more about who you are and like what led you to be here. And, you know, I've been very fortunate to also meet a lot of people like through Instagram, and I've put up this like prompt on like every Monday on my Instagram story about like for friends who are like for friends who are running and don't see themselves in running, whether it's like from an advertising perspective or from a corporate perspective or even on the starting line, like what does running mean to them, and what is diversity, equity, inclusivity in running mean to them as well? And through having these like super meaningful conversations and taking perspective and learning from people who share the same hobby as me, I've been able to alter my thinking, change the way I speak about running. I've been able to, you know, hopefully bring some of these ideas in how I work, but definitely how I carry myself as well. So, Yeah.
Can you share any of that? Because I've seen those posts. I think it's great that you're opening the conversation for that. And, you know, that I hope that people reach out and you're able to have conversations with people who want to have them. So I take any and every opportunity I can to learn more about that. So is there anything that stands out to you there?
These conversations have been great, just from people sharing personal journeys about what they see, but even some people have like called me out on terminology that I've used, and like being comfortable in that vulnerable position is hard, like putting display like that. So like I used to phrase it being, I want to be vocal that nobody owes me an education. Nobody owes me a conversation. Don't feel like, you know, you have to take on this burden. I'm just super grateful to somebody to give me the time. But the way that I would like phrase this in my post is I want to learn more from the community that runs. And the way that I was referring to before is I was specifically using the label of BIPOC, and somebody wrote in and was just like, I don't like how you use that label. It is like, with that label, that is a label that people use to identify me, and like, is there any other way that you can address people? So that was a huge change for me in just like changing my terminology. But people have also hit me up about, like, somebody said, hey, there's a lot of focus on like post-race beers and, you know, drink on us and, you know, things of that nature. And they're like, I am, you know, in recovery, and that does not feel comfortable for me to see that. And for there to be like, I'm not going to come to that event because it doesn't represent what running means to me. You know, like my relationship with running doesn't include that. So I don't know why that needs to be a part of everyone's thing that's being blasted around as like a post-race celebration. And, you know, people, one of the best things that I remember hearing from a friend was, don't be surprised as a brand, or, you know, for any brand, if like you're making efforts and they're being, and people are skeptical, because the question that everyone has in their head was, where was this brand, you know, 6 months ago, a year ago, when we were starting and doing our thing? We're 8 years into what we're doing as a club. Why are you involved now? So it's a lot about like good faith, understanding and meeting the people behind the movement to respect the vision of people. And I think there are brands in the space that throw a check at people and hope that makes a difference, or that there's like something to be gained by, I don't know, shoehorning themselves into projects. But the Gavin Smith, so I met him at Run Club back in the day, but we reconnected on this, and he was just like, there are people in communities that you're in that have great ideas, and they've had them for years. They've just never had the resources to actually like make it happen. So before you thrust ideas into a community, see if somebody there already has the idea to do it, right? You're not creating anything new per se. That person probably has a better way of accomplishing what you want to do.
Mm-hmm. And they understand the community that they're in too, right?
Yeah.
Like you're fortunate to be in a position where you work for, you know, a great running brand that can be an excellent vehicle for a message or an idea. But yeah, you're right. Like these ideas exist oftentimes in those communities, and it's just because they don't have that that same vehicle to get to where they want to go, I guess. So
yeah.
If you can help that or facilitate that in any way, well, then that's I think what spirit of all this lies, you know?
Yeah, I'm super lucky to work for a brand that is invested in a baseline of understanding that everyone runs for the love of it. And the brand mission for Tracksmith is to help people fall deeper in love with this hobby and this activity, and to pursue it for that reason alone. So it's easy for me in this case to like bring these conversations into what I'm doing, because at the baseline, I'm connecting with crews and clubs and communities that all share that same desire and that same love for that activity that we're both sharing. So I'm just happy to be where I'm at, you know? I think it'd be harder in different places. That's all I can say.
Yeah, and I love that line too. I mean, being happy with where you're at. I mean, we all have a journey, we all have a story, and we, you know, you have to be comfortable with where you are at all, you know, at all times, and that it's, you know, a part of the process, like all these analogies, these running analogies. And I know you said, no one's paying me. I usually say like, nobody's winning this thing. Like we're not winning. I forgot to tell you that, but I'm like, no, I mean, you're not going to win the thing. So why do you give a shit?
Right.
You
know? Right.
Like, just do your best. I mean, that's what I love about running, is that, you know, you're out there with tons of people, and we all have different ideas of what we want to do. But at the end of the day, it's like, I think really what lies there is that, you know, we're just trying to get as fit as we can. We want to push our body to the limit and see where this can take us. You know, our bodies are vehicles too, right? So, you know, it's nice to see people using that too, to spread an idea, spread a message, bring people together as well. I think that's where, you know, that non-selfish way of looking at the whole thing, you know, the big picture of all this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So you said what's next for you, and what are you working on now?
So from a professional side of things, or from like a work side, I know we're getting ready for a, you know, fall of activations again, which is exciting and scary all at once, to take on so much as a brand again. And I have some other like side projects that I'm pretty passionate about, and I want to explore in the fall as well. Like something that I'm going to get a little bit more into, I hope, is doing a little bit more like athlete advocacy. I guess what I mean by that is, like, I think there are a lot of very talented people in the running space who just get ignored and looked over, and they just don't have the tools to be as successful as they could be from like a branding and marketing side of things. So I wanted to partner with some athletes to like enable them to have more informed conversations with brands and with race organizers and, you know, with, you know, any kind of entity to grow their personal brand. I think that's something I want to hopefully put some more time and effort into in the fall, and getting ready for Berlin too, from a running side.
Oh yeah. And how's that training going? I wanted to ask you, what's it like to be in Boulder?
Yeah, Boulder. So I'm coming up on a year in Boulder in September, and it's wild to think it's already here. Like, that flew by, obviously. I was very fortunate that when I hit the ground here, that the community that I found made sense from day one. Like, I run with Boulder Underground and the track club, and the people there made me feel like I was at home when I had previously been teen and running and going to Vermont and with like a small group of friends, but I missed the team aspect of it. So Boulder's also humbled me a lot in a good way. You know, it makes me almost more calm in my day to day because there are so many people who are so much better than I am. And like you said, I'm not going to win it. I'm not going to win the thing when there's so many, you know, high performing people in the area. So training is going, I think it's going okay. It gets a little tricky with the travel that I've been doing. I've taken about like 8 flights this year already. So the training is interrupted often, mm-hmm. but I think I'm in a stretch right now where things are going to be more consistent and progressive. Very lucky that my go-to training partner, Erin, she and I are both racing Berlin, and we're both going back to CIM this year as well.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's so cool. I love CIM. I thought it was such a good vibe, and I love the track, and I won't be going back, but I've kind of put all my eggs in the Berlin basket.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah. I mean, excited to run a different kind of course too, which is always fun. Part of what you were saying is like finding out what running means to people. And before I get there, I'll ask you, you know, what has running taught you?
Running, this is a tough one. I feel like running's taught me like, There's the interpersonal and there's the intrapersonal side of things, right? Like, it's taught me stuff about myself and the way, it's also taught me the way about things of how I interact with others is also another aspect of it. So I think I've learned for myself how important it is to feel I'm a part of something, that back and forth with my passion to kind of take the next step at times in training. But when I feel like I'm on a team and we're all working together, it's shown me how important that is to me. And that's something I'll always hold as a value. But in terms of how running's taught me about the way I interact with others, I will never overlook the ability to take someone's perspective because of running. And those conversations, you know, like those little Instagram DM, you know, Instagram stories that turn into DM conversations, into a video call, into like a full-blown friendship, has taught me that you're never going to know everything about a person, about a place, about a community, about an experience. So I just need to be open to talking to anyone and everyone, because I'm going to learn something no matter what.
No, that's very true. Yeah. And I think in that way, like, you know, Instagram is good and bad for a lot of reasons. And that's a good side of it, is that, you know, it connects people. It allows me to connect with people like yourself too. And you know, see you in real life at CIM, you know, and then next thing we know, we're on a podcast. So,
yeah.
I think that's great, you know? And what does it mean to you? Like, what does this all mean to you?
It's interesting to think about, like, when I hear that question, I think about, what are you going to tell your, you know, grandkids one day. Like, I don't plan to have kids, but that's what I think about, like, the impact. Like, what's the long term? I guess the relationship I have to running is something that I hope to have for a lifetime, and to appreciate, like, the friendships I made from it. But interestingly, I think beyond that, I hope to keep a lighthearted approach with myself through this entire thing, so that I can walk away from this sport at some time when either my body can't do it, or maybe I'm just not into it anymore, and it doesn't, like, ruin my life, if that makes sense. You know, I'm like, yeah. I'm afraid of like the narrative of the person who runs, like, so much, and it becomes their identity to the point that they don't know who they are without it. I don't want that at all in my old age. So I want to have a comfortable relationship. I want to have a productive relationship with running. I want to have a positive relationship with running, but I also want to be lighthearted about what I want from it, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, it's what we do. It's not who we are. Yeah. You know, your legacy is not going to be defined by the running that you're doing or not doing, you know, or and you hear athletes say that all the time, you know, and like, even when you talk to Olympians and, you know, when they're getting all the attention leading up to the Olympics, and then it's like, it all just ends, you know, and it's like, yay, you know, like that's it, it's over. And, you know, but who are you after that, you know? And there's gotta be more to, there is a lot more to people than just the running, you know? Yeah. So what do you like to do when you're not running?
It's funny to think about it, because I don't know how much time I have outside of, like, working and running and running itself. And, like, even my side projects are, like, invested in running and handling. So it's like, wow, I'm really digging an absolute ditch here for myself. I think something that I do enjoy, or, you know, if I can, like, craft some time away from running. I mean, I enjoy cycling, but I think that's also an easy thing to just say another, like, physical activity. But to challenge myself beyond that is, from a, like, being outside standpoint, right, an activity standpoint, I love playing disc golf. I like going on, like, on hikes. Yeah. And then from, like, a professional side of things, I really like working with entrepreneurs and people with, like, a kernel of an idea. It could be anything, and just working with them to hatch that into something. I've worked in a venture accelerator before when I was in law school, and those were some of, like, really fun days of somebody coming to you with a kernel of an idea and sitting over just a table on the other side and then trying to, like, make something of that that's viable. So maybe that's some stuff I'll do more of after the running's over.
Mm-hmm. And what happened to that law life that you were pursuing?
The opinion I had when I was in school is I wanted to be an in-house attorney for a brand. I thought it'd be fun to work for, like, one client and to truly be tapped in with everything they're doing, and to be another arm and be another resource. And the focus of mine when I started law school was intellectual property. And I don't come from a science background, so I really don't have any facilities to do anything like patents. But I was interested in, like, trademark protection and copyrights. My parents are visual artists, and my brother is a composer and conductor of music. And so I thought, like, on that side of things, this is a tool that they could use, right? Anyone can use these tools to kind of protect their thoughts and to grow their vision. And then I thought, oh, it'd be cool to do this with a brand, as, like, people are creating new concepts and technology and things. And what the big thing that shifted for me is, as I got more and more into school and closer to getting out, I was doing these internships, and I would talk to these people in house and say, like, hey, how did you get here? Right? Like, what was your journey? And the overwhelming response I got was like, oh, well, I worked in a large firm for like 10 to 12 years. And then this job opportunity opened up and I like jumped to it immediately. So they're few and far between. Mm. So I started doing the math on it and I was like, all right, I am on the younger side. At the time, I was like going to graduate law school at 23. And I thought, okay, I can, or 24. And it's like, yeah, I can work in a firm for 10 to 12 years to be like in my mid 30s before I like my job. It's like, I don't know, man. Yeah. I think there might be another way. So I worked in tech for a little bit because I had this, I was still figuring out what I wanted and how to get there. And my friend Jeff, who was one of my colleagues at Tracksmith, he became the retail manager when I was working part-time in retail. And we were in Grandma's Marathon. He ended up hitting the standard, which was super cool. And we were celebrating one night and he knew that I was like waiting for the opportunity to get into the industry. And he said to me, like, what would it take for you to leave your job in tech? And I said, if you gave me benefits, I'll be there tomorrow. So yeah, with Jeff giving me that time and in that conversation and knowing how bad I wanted it, the conversation with Tracksmith after that was, hey, there's this job in you know, customer service. It might not be what you want to do, but it's a way in. And if you take a chance on it, you know, it could go somewhere. And it paid dividends. I'm like super happy I took that leap, and especially with this brand and at that time, you know, like right. So much of that was beautiful timing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's how law went away.
You took a chance. Look at you now, right? Like,
I know, right?
You took a chance.
Yeah.
You saw yourself in other people and what you know, like, oh God, that could be me later on. And took the chance, and, you know, good things happen, you know, sometimes when you put yourself out there, and, you know, it's that's amazing that you got to where you are now and continue to do great things.
Yeah.
Where can people?
Oh yeah. Sorry. Go for it.
Yeah. Go ahead. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that I know that timing thing is a lot of luck. And it's also, honestly, just a ton of privilege to be in that space at that time. Right. Like the privilege of being like at Grandma's Marathon and to be talking to that person I had a relationship with prior, and, you know, to have a relationship to this brand at that time, you know, all of that stuff is not an opportunity that everybody has. So I realized it more and more every day that was like, that was a very special moment for the luck and the privilege side of it, you know?
Yeah, totally. And it's, you know, you put yourself out there to have these conversations and it is luck, yes, but I think there's, you know, it's not all, it's funny when you look at it, you know, but like it's usually a series of events, you know, where that you influenced, you know, I think too. It's like at work, I work at a gold mine in Nunavut, it's way up north, but they talk about it similarly with accidents, I guess. And I don't know why I'm thinking about this now, but you know, when something happens, it's usually because things have been ignored, you know. If you reverse that on the positive side of when good things happen, I mean, I'm sure it can be viewed maybe in the same way. I don't know, like that you've done a little bit, like had this conversation, or you've done this series of things without knowing, but that then connected you to this job somehow, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes any sense.
No, it does. You're saying there's some effort to be attributed to outcomes. It's like how I would.
That's, I guess.
Right? Like the succinct way that I've never been able to say that before right now. But
Awesome. Where can people find out more about you, Drew, and have like a conversation with you about running space or anything that might have on their mind?
I would love that. So people can find me. Instagram is probably the easiest way. So I'm at hartman.io. So it's hartman.io on Instagram. And I also have a website that like I created a little way back when to have another means of communication. So that's just drewhartman.com. But yeah, great ways to do that.
That's great. Well, you know, I want to thank you for coming on and sharing with us and getting to hear your story a little bit. Like you get to know so many people in the space and open up room for those conversations. And I'm really glad and grateful that you came on so we could have this conversation here today.
Cool. I appreciate it, Justin. And when you asked me to chat, I was like, why does he want to talk to me? He's got so many cool people in his place. But, you know, that statement is a reflection of, you know, the work that you do. So thank you again for having me on.
Yeah, amazing. And I appreciate that wholeheartedly. And it's, you know, it's a response I get from many, you know, people, like, why me sometimes? And it's like, this podcast is space for everyone. It's not just the elites. It's not just, you know, like really fast runners. I want everyone to be able to share their experience and where they're going and what they think about the sport. So, yeah, and I can't wait to connect again in Berlin in about a month's time. So we'll see you there.
We'll be chatting soon. Thanks.
Yeah, take care, Drew. Bye-bye. I've been running for a while now, 12 years, in fact. It's funny to look back on how I got started and how different things are for me now. I made a lot of mistakes, simply because I didn't know any better. I ran hard every time I went out. I ran longer and fewer days to increase volume. I wasn't recovering as well as I should have, and I didn't prepare long enough for distances I was taking on. What I wish I did from the start was get a coach to help guide me through and teach me the right way. Sound familiar? Well, I learned a lot from those early mistakes, and now I want to help you. Over the last year, I've gradually entered into the world of coaching, helping athletes of all levels reach their goals. It's virtual, interactive, one-on-one training that will help you focus on running so that you can hit your next target. Just shoot me a message at jpugs84 on Instagram with any questions you may have, and we'll take things from there. I look forward to working with you.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of The Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to leave your reviews for us on Apple Podcasts or message us directly on Instagram with your comments, feedback, and suggestions for future guests. Now take what you've learned and run with it.
The Rundown is a WRG production, produced by Leslie Woods and Forrest McKay. All the amazing graphics you see on social media are created by Ryan Bondi, and the show is hosted by me, Justin Pugliese.